support. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great, great. So welcome tonight to our talk, Giving Back Above and Beyond Cancer's 2015 Trip to Nepal. We are the Comparison Project, a program in the global philosophy of religion in the local Des Moines community. As many of you may know already, our topic for this year, our theme for this year is Death and Dying. I'm Leah Kalmanson, the Associate Director here in the Philosophy and Religion Department at Drake, and I'm filling in for Tim Nipper, the Director of the Comparison Project, who's very sorry that he couldn't be here, but he's taking photographs for a sort of a photographic documentary book that we're putting together on the local religions of Des Moines, which will be coming out hopefully in the next year or so with the student press here at Drake. So that's very exciting. He sends his apologies. If you want to know more about what the Comparison Project is up to, the photo book, in addition to the lecture and dialogue series, in addition to the classes that we teach here at Drake on religions of Des Moines, and the digital stories that we facilitate by community members in those religious communities, you can visit our website, comparisonproject.wordpress.drake.edu. I will keep this quick tonight because we have two speakers coming up. The Comparison Project is generously supported by 7 sources, and we'd like to thank them all. Drake's Center for the Humanities, Drake's Principal Financial Group for Global Citizenship, the Medbury Fund, Humanities Iowa, the Des Moines Area Religious Council, Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, Isles Funeral Home, that's our special series sponsor for the programming this year on death and dying. And we will say that the opinions expressed here tonight do not necessarily express those of our sponsors. There is an attendance folder at the front that I hope everyone signed on the way in. One of our sponsors, Humanities Iowa, would appreciate if we all signed that. So it will be passed around while the talk is happening tonight. And if you didn't sign it on your way in, just sign it. Now, there are also evaluation sheets, and Humanities Iowa is very grateful to hear from you if you'd like to give any feedback on the programming. And again, for more info, in addition to the website, there's some brochures up there. We have a Facebook page, a Twitter account. I'll tell you very quickly about our next events. The next event is March 29th. It's in our Calvin Community Panel on Aging, and that will be a talk on caregiving, led by Charles Worth. It'll be in Sussman Theater at Drake at 7. And then on April 14th, we have a talk called Secular Death by Amy Hollywood. She's an endowed chair from Harvard University, an excellent scholar. It should be really fun. That will be as fun as the topic of secular death can get at 6 p.m. in Sussman. And I will note that that's at 6 p.m. Our website still says 7, but we had to move it down a little. So as I mentioned at the start, we're here tonight for Giving Back Above and Beyond Cancer's 2015 trip to Nepal. To introduce the topic and the speakers, we'll hear from Yasmina Madden, a visiting assistant professor in the English department here at Drake. Yasmina got her MFA at Indiana University and teaches courses on short story and creative nonfiction, among other topics. Here, she's won numerous awards for her own work, which is published in national and regional journals, literary journals. In addition to her teaching and writing, she facilitates community writing workshops for Above and Beyond Cancer. She traveled with the group to Nepal in 2012 and to Peru in 2014, helping survivors and caretakers produce creative nonfiction personal narratives about their experiences. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to Yasmina.
Thank you, Leah, and thanks also to the Comparison Project and all of its sponsors for hosting this event tonight. Thank you also, of course, to Dr. Richard Deming and to Jake Dehai for coming to Drake to discuss their time in Nepal on their medical mission and journey of service sponsored by Above and Beyond Cancer Society. Also, thank you to our photographer, Dylan Huey, who has been kind enough to exhibit some of his work from the most recent medical mission to Nepal. His photographs are spread out all along here, so please, if you didn't get a chance to check them out after the talk. Drake University and the Above and Beyond Cancer Foundation have enjoyed such a wonderful relationship for the past 4 years. Drake students have benefited from internships with the foundation. Many survivors and caregivers have taken part in our Drake-sponsored community writing workshops, and this semester, Above and Beyond Cancer has been lucky to be chosen by a journalism and business capstone course in which the students' semester-long project focuses on creating marketing and PR campaigns for the foundation. Also, as Leah mentioned, several Drake professors have been lucky enough to travel with the foundation and with its team of survivors, including me, to places like Peru and Nepal. So I can tell you firsthand, these are transformative, amazing journeys, and the work that the foundation is doing for our community and beyond is truly, truly amazing. Let's also not forget that we have another connection because Dr. Deming received an honorary degree from Drake in 2012. So technically, he's honorary bulldog, too. So he's on our team as well. In addition to that, Dr. Deming is the founder of the Above and Beyond Cancer Foundation and the medical director for the Mercy Cancer Center here in Des Moines. It would take me far, far too long to give you a complete list of Dr. Deming's awards or get into all of the accomplishments he has achieved. So I'll just offer you a handful here. Dr. Deming has been the recipient of the 100 Award from the Massachusetts General Hospital for his work with cancer survivors. He was also awarded the very prestigious Lane Adams Award by the American Cancer Society for Excellence and Compassion in Patient Care, as well as the Iowa Cancer Champion Award for his tireless efforts in the field of advocacy. To anyone who has spent even just a short time with Dr. Deming, it's not at all surprising that he has been singled out so many times for his extraordinary dedication to treating his patients and cancer survivors with both compassion and dignity. Dr. Deming's commitment to practicing compassion informs not only his relationships with his patients, but so many aspects of his life, be it creating the Above and Beyond Cancer Foundation, the Richard Deming Foundation, or lobbying to reduce the burden on cancer patients through legislative, research, and policy changes, or leading a spin class for survivors and sharing in their everyday lives. Tonight, Dr. Deming will share the work Above and Beyond Cancer has been doing in our community, and again, far beyond. Founded in 2011, the foundation has helped to elevate the lives of survivors by creating wellness programs such as the YMCA Above and Beyond Cancer Optimal Living for Survivors program. This is a one-of-a-kind wellness series in mind, body, and spirit cancer survivorship, and it is open to all. It offers spin, yoga, and mindful meditation classes that strengthen not just the body, but just as importantly, the mind and the spirit. Additionally, the Above and Beyond Cancer Foundation offers survivors and caregivers the opportunity to travel to places such as Africa, Nepal, and Peru on journeys that challenge survivors to see all they are capable of in their survivorship and to provide valuable service to places in need, such as the most recent medical mission to Bhaktapur Cancer Hospital in Kathmandu, which Dr. Deming will tell you more about right now. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Richard Deming.
Thank you, Yasmina. And thank you all of you. I thank all of you for coming. Thanks to the Comparison Project for having us be part of this series. We really love our relationship with Drake. It has really expanded what we've been able to do. It has enhanced our programming, and we really are excited this semester to have students and a capstone project to be helping us. The topic for the Comparison Project this year, as Leah mentioned, is death and dying. So let's start off with a few words of wisdom. Oh, and there's Professor Nepper. Thank you for coming, Tim. Plato said, "The very bedrock of our spiritual lives is the contemplation of death." Viktor Frankl said, "Death gives life meaning." He also said, "He who has a why to live for can bear almost any how." So, you obviously know the connection, the obvious connection between cancer and death. Here in the United States this year, over 600,000 Americans will die of cancer. Clearly, there's a connection. But I'm going to challenge you to think of a different connection between death and dying and cancer in the perspective of living your life. And as Viktor Frankl said, death gives life meaning. And I would say facing death has the opportunity to be a teacher, to be a catalyst, to be an inspiration, to be a deadline, to get your butt in gear and live your life fully. So that's really what Above and Beyond Cancer is all about. When you or a loved one is told you have cancer, it's basically a 2x4 up the side of the head that reminds all of you what you already know. It reminds you that you're going to die someday. And it reminds you what you already know, that you don't know when that's going to happen. So even the word cancer has the power to bring you to the realization of your own mortality. So what do you do if you're diagnosed with cancer? You obviously deal with the shock, the fear, the anger, but then if you're going to deal with it intelligently, you get a team together, you do your research, you learn as much as you can, and you begin your cancer journey one step at a time with a team of support around you, with hope and with optimism, going on the journey up one step at a time. And if you make it up to the top, and whether the top of that journey is being cured of cancer, having the cancer under control, having it in remission, or getting as far as you can go, hopefully you come through the journey with a greater sense of your own strength. That's what cancer has the ability to do. That's what really any adversity has the ability to do, is teach you what strength you have within yourself, and to also instill in you this sense of resilience so that you can live your life even more fully. Everybody's heard of post-traumatic stress. It's when you go through a difficult time, and after going through that difficult time, you are less prepared to take on even the normal challenges of life. That's post-traumatic stress. Well, there's also something called post-traumatic growth. And it's when you go through difficulty, through adversity, through a challenge in life, through cancer, and you come out the other end, not with post-traumatic stress, but with a greater sense of courage and confidence and resilience and strength, and you're better able to deal with the challenges that life puts in front of you. In fact, if God doesn't give you enough challenges, you may choose to put a mountain in front of your pathway. You know, with the courage and confidence you gain, you may not know that you can climb the mountain, but you'll know that trying to climb the mountain will give you strength and meaning and purpose and can ultimately transform your life. When we did our first journey in 2011, we didn't know we were beginning a not-for-profit. It was a group of my patients, a group of 14 cancer survivors and caregivers. And these were individuals who had come through their cancer journey. And I didn't even know the phrase post-traumatic growth at that point. But I knew that these were some amazing individuals who had come through a very difficult journey and were willing to look at life differently than they did before their cancer. They were able to look at their life and reorder priorities and find a sense of purpose and passion. They were willing to reach above and beyond what they ever thought was possible. And we journeyed up Everest to Everest Base Camp. And having been on a mountain climbing journey in Nepal before, I knew that it would transform the lives of individuals going on this journey. Very similar to the metaphor of climbing a mountain that cancer can be. Sometimes climbing a mountain is a metaphor, sometimes it's actually climbing a mountain. And there's certainly adversity and difficulty that comes along the way. I knew it would change their lives, but what I didn't realize is that the power that Above and Beyond Cancer Journeys would have to change, transform, and inspire the lives of others who just learned about the journey through the social media, through the writing, through the films, through the photographs. And that was the beginning of Above and Beyond Cancer. One of the things that we often talk about in Above and Beyond Cancer as we're journeying is the relationship between suffering and compassion. And I remember very clearly as I'm climbing Mount Kilimanjaro with Father Frank Bagnano, who at that time was 72 years old, cancer survivor, as we're journeying up the mountain. And we're talking about suffering. And suffering, and in sufferings, the religious response of suffering through various religions and the relationship between suffering and compassion. And I remember clearly Father Frank saying to me that afternoon as we're climbing, he said, "Hey, Doc, if you spoke Latin, you wouldn't be amazed about this relationship." I mean, in the Latin language, the word for suffering is passion, as in the passion of Christ. And in Latin, compassion literally means with suffering. And so it's our own suffering that allows us to recognize suffering, not only in ourselves, but to recognize suffering in others. And it's really our own suffering and our recognition of suffering that allows us not only to recognize suffering in others, but to reach out compassionately, empathetically, to be with someone's suffering in an attempt to relieve it. Everyone going through the cancer journey experiences suffering. And when we go on the mountain journeys, I'll tell you right now, before you sign up, there's going to be some suffering. There's some beauty, there's some ecstasy, there's some diarrhea and vomiting and headaches. And how do you get up the mountain? You live your suffering and you get up the mountain with the compassion of those who are traveling with you. You get up the mountain mostly with hugs. That's how you get up the mountain. Yeah, occasionally a kick in the butt, a can of suck it up, but mostly it's hugs that gets you up the mountain. Let me just tell you a little bit about the most recent journey that we did. So all of our journeys up until this most recent one, so we had done Everest Base Camp, and we had climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and we had done a 3,000-mile bicycle race across America in 6 days, 21 hours, and 17 minutes. And we had run 4,000 miles, four marathons a day for 40 days across the country. And we'd gone up and over the Andes to Machu Picchu, and we had summited a 20,000-foot peak in Jose. This journey that we did this time that Jake DeHai is going to tell you about was different. We actually, before the earthquake in Nepal, had planned to go to Mount Kailash. Mount Kailash, the most sacred mountain in the entire world. It's in Tibet. It's a mountain that has never been climbed, not because it's unclimbable, but because it is sacred. In four different religions around the world, it is a sacred mountain, and individuals do a pilgrimage around it. Two followers of two religions go around clockwise. The other two religions go around counterclockwise. It's a 30-mile journey around the mountain. And you go around the outside of the mountain, but you get up to 19,000 feet going around the outside of the mountain. So we'd already announced the trip. We're going on this mind-body-spirit journey up into the high plateau to go up into the mountains and circle Mount Kailash. And then the earthquake happened in the Himalayas. And first I was, oh my gosh, this is really going to screw up our trip. And what's going to happen? And can we go over there? Are we going to get permits? And you know, it didn't take very long before we started seeing the videos and the photographs and realized that there are people affected. And our future trip to the Himalayas is like the last thing we should be worrying about. And as we started learning about our friends in Nepal and how they were affected and how their villages were damaged and how injuries and deaths occurred, we realized that even if things worked out and we could go, this wasn't the right thing to do. So we changed our journey. Instead of doing this mountain journey to Tibet, we decided to go right back to Kathmandu to do a medical mission to help the victims of the earthquake and also to work at a very poor cancer hospital in Kathmandu. So our group consisted of 10 cancer survivors and 12 caregivers. Cancer survivors were age 20 to age 70, men and women of all different types of cancers, some cured of their cancer, some in remission, some still undergoing cancer treatment. As we journeyed to Nepal, we spent time at two different cancer centers, at the Bhaktapur Cancer Hospital, a very, very poor cancer hospital, where we had the opportunity to meet with several survivors who had come together to meet our survivors, with several surgeons and palliative care physicians working in this very poor cancer hospital that in many ways resembled more of a hospice center than what you would think of as a sophisticated cancer center. Even the operating rooms with open windows, rats running through, but amazing stories of perseverance and resilience on individuals going through the cancer journey. The most difficult thing for me was seeing individuals with cancers that were potentially curable in our country, where the ability to cure those cancers is not possible. But what really prevailed was the human spirit and the nature, the commonality that cancer survivors, cancer patients, physicians have around the world, regardless of what they have to work with. You do the best you can with the resources that you have. And the compassion on the part of those caring for the cancer survivors was no different than you'd find in absolutely the best cancer center in the United States. So we spent time at the Bhaktapur Cancer Center, and then we also spent time at the Kanti Children's Hospital on the cancer ward, where we met 24 children with cancer. And there again, many of the cancers would have been very, very curable here in the United States, but were not curable there because they didn't have the means to do intensive chemotherapy with stem cell transplants. They certainly didn't have some of the sophisticated surgical techniques we have, and many of the others. You're going to hear from Jake. Jake's going to tell you his cancer story. But Jake is a pediatric cancer survivor. He's going to be graduating from Iowa State this spring, but he went through his cancer journey as a child. And I think one of the most gratifying things for me on this journey was at the pediatric cancer hospital when we got to meet with parents of the children going through the cancer journey. And for Jake to get up and speak to them as, you know, this vision of what can it be like for my child after cancer to see someone like Jake and to be a vision of hope and promise. Obviously, not every child we met has the opportunity to realize those dreams, but the hope and inspiration that it provides was some of the most important work that we had done. We've also made some incredible connections, and let me just tell you about one connection. So it's an incredible story of serendipity. I mean, if I wrote this up as a work of fiction, you would say, that is so much baloney, nothing like that could ever happen. But let me just tell you, so go back to Kilimanjaro, 2012. We go to Kilimanjaro, and we have 19 cancer survivors and 17 caregivers, and we're up the mountain. And one of the survivors on that journey was a beautiful, beautiful young woman, Carrie. Carrie at that time was 32 years old, cancer-free for about 6 months, had gone through a journey of surgery and chemotherapy and radiation therapy for breast cancer. And just a little bit of her story, on the way up that first night camping at base camp, getting ready to go up the mountain, it was dirty and muddy and raining, and she had bad diarrhea, and she left at home her husband and her three-year-old daughter, Carrie, and she was so homesick, and she was so intestinally sick, and she was miserable and wet and cold, and I think, oh my gosh, there's no way she's going to make this. And we go to bed in the tents that night. It was raining, and first thing I ordered up 38 hugs for Carrie before she goes, and I'm thinking all through the night that we're going to have to find a way to get her back, that she's just, this is not going to work. She comes out of the tent the next morning, says, I'm feeling better, I'm going. And 5 days later, she's standing at over 20,000 feet on the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro. And we come back, and at the airport, Travis, her husband, and Lily, her daughter, are waiting for her. High fives and hugs and tears. And then 4 months later, Carrie's cancer comes back. And 2 months later, she dies of her cancer. On this journey that we did to Nepal, Carrie's mom, Rhonda, came on the journey in honor and memory of Carrie. Carrying Carrie's flag, we always take prayer flags with us, and comes on this journey with us. And Carrie's mom, Rhonda, is with us when we're at the Bhaktapur Cancer Hospital and meet this beautiful little boy, 8 years old, named Dipesh. And Dipesh is in the middle of the back there in the turquoise t-shirt. And what you can't see in that picture is Dipesh is missing a leg. So Dipesh had an osteosarcoma of his femur. And he had was going to have the sarcoma removed. They were going to be able to keep his leg. And then, ironically, during the earthquake, he broke his leg right through the tumor. And so saving his leg was no longer an option. But fortunately, there's a Nepali surgeon who trained in Canada who did this amazing surgery on Dipesh in this hospital that I just can't believe. So he removed Dipesh's leg from about here down to the ankle, left all the blood vessels and nerves along the side of the leg, and took out the lower half of the femur and the upper half of the tibia, then brought the foot, rotated it 180 degrees, brought the foot up to connect it to the rest of the femur that wasn't involved, and his heel now becomes his new knee with his foot pointing backwards. And the reason you do that is once, if you get a prosthesis, you can put it over the foot, and what was the ankle joint turned 180 degrees around becomes the knee. So you now have not just a stiff leg of a prosthesis, but a knee joint. The only problem is there's nowhere in Nepal that makes any prostheses. So we think, gosh, that would be amazing if we could do something to help Dipesh. So we come back and Rhonda introduces us to Nick. Nick went to school with her daughter Carrie from kindergarten through 12th grade. Nick happens to be a bilateral lower leg amputee. And he has two prostheses. He didn't slow him down. He was in all sorts of sports. He actually was a wrestling champion, won an NCAA wrestling championship, wrestling for Simpson College. And Nick, for his job, works at a prosthetic manufacturing company that makes legs. So Nick, through Carrie's mother, Rhonda, gets introduced to us. We tell him the story of Dipesh. And not only does Nick know Carrie, Nick's wife is a breast cancer survivor. And so Nick talks to his company, and they're all in, and we're going to be making a leg for Dipesh. And Nick and his wife are going to go on one of our cancer journeys to Nepal, and we'll be taking a leg to Dipesh. So those are the stories of serendipity that happen, and it's hard to believe that it's just coincidence. So I encourage you to come along with us on journeys. I want to conclude my section by just reading a couple of selections. One is, again, first of all, one of my favorite personal reflections is, again, getting back to the idea of death and dying, not being just about death and dying, but being an inspiration for living. So I like to say, if diamonds were as plentiful as grains of sand, they would be worthless. If living forever, if we lived forever, then wasting a day of our life would be trivial. But it's precisely because we don't live forever that makes today so valuable. And that death and dying ultimately can be the catalyst for living our lives fully with purpose and passion. And I'm going to end with just a reflection by another cancer survivor. And this is Charlie Cutler, who was on our journey, our Race Across America. Charlie was diagnosed with cancer at age 22, and he died of his cancer just 2 weeks ago at age 26, of a type of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And the remarks I'm going to read were remarks that he made when he was awarded an Above and Beyond Cancer Award. And he really puts into words much of what this inspiration of the fact that we're going to die someday, whether it's of cancer or not, and how death and dying can really be a reason to live our life with purpose and passion. And Charlie wrote, "I'm honored to be receiving the Above and Beyond Cancer Award and have the opportunity to stand up here and speak this evening. 2.5 years ago, when I was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, Dr. Deming told me that this experience would be one giant roller coaster full of peaks and valleys. Looking back now, that's exactly what it's consisted of. There have been many celebratory moments, such as completing every mile of Ragbri, to more serious moments, such as getting life flighted to Mayo for emergency surgery. My experiences have consisted of over half a dozen different chemotherapy regimens, multiple surgeries, 2 stem cell transplants, relapses and remissions. It's been one hell of a ride, and I found myself in a lot of situations that I never thought I'd be in. Some really scary, though some pretty funny. You've never experienced an awkward situation until your mother drives you to the doctor to give a semen sample. To top it off, when the nurse came, called my name, my mom stood up and says, 'Well, how long is this whole thing going to take?' 'I don't know, Mom, but you're certainly not helping the situation.' Traveling through these peaks and valleys, I've learned a lot. Oftentimes, while on this roller coaster ride, I've needed to help getting out of those valleys. This is where a strong support group of family and friends and doctors is crucial. I'm so fortunate that I've had all of that. I would like to thank Dr. Deming for always helping me through the tough times, Dr. Broker for treating me like family and answering my every question, and my friends for spending countless hours visiting me in the hospital. Living your life with purpose, passion, and compassion is a line from Dr. Deming that has stuck with me through my experiences. He's built Above and Beyond Cancer on these principles, which is why it's such a special organization that means so much to me. It not only raises money and awareness for cancer, but it encourages people to get out there and climb their next peak. It helps people get out of those valleys and plan their next adventure. Thank you to all my friends and family for always pushing and supporting me through the process. And thank you for helping me to live my life above and beyond cancer." So with that, I want to introduce you to another amazing young man and cancer survivor. And actually, I just realized I'm not going to introduce you to Jake, but Jake's going to come up in a minute. And it was really a joy and a blessing and an inspiration to have Jake on our journey to Nepal, especially when we were visiting the Pediatric Cancer Center, and to have Jake as a symbol of what it's like to live above and beyond and to provide the hope and inspiration. But it's not my job to introduce Jake, so I'm not going to introduce Jake. I'm going to introduce Yasmina again to introduce Jake.
That's
The only thing I would add, Dr. Deming probably hit all of the most important aspects about Jake, who is so wonderful and generous to share his very busy life with us right now. Jake is about to graduate from Iowa State University and is very busy finishing up with a demanding major in political science, international relations, and economics. He is also an avid traveler and has spent and has lived and studied Arabic in both Jordan and Morocco. He was diagnosed, as Dr. Deming mentioned, with a rare form of bone cancer at age 10 and then recently traveled on the medical mission to Nepal in 2015. And he is also from West Des Moines, so our hometown here too. All right, coming up, Jake.
Thanks for Dr. Deming for kind of introducing me and then Yasmina for finishing the job. Thanks everybody for having me here, and I guess I'm gonna kind of cover things again, but my name is Jake Dehi. I'm currently a senior at Iowa State University studying political science, international relations, and economics. And so this past September, I traveled with Dr. Deming and Above and Beyond Cancer to Kathmandu, Nepal. Now, as a college student, I think everyone enjoys any and all reasons to skip classes. So traveling 7,500 miles away seemed like a really good use of my unexcused absences. So there I was on the plane with Dr. Deming sitting and finding myself kind of wondering that I've been in some pretty interesting situations in my life, but I had known that one was going to kind of be a little special and a little different. And it called for some introspection, kind of some self-realization of how did I get here? And to put it bluntly, it all started with my cancer diagnosis. At the age of 10, every kid should be playing outside with their friends or watching cartoons on a Saturday morning. But there's something different in store for me. Around this time, 12 years ago, I was unable to breathe out of my nose. And it started gradually amidst constant complaints from my parents about my snoring. However, we soon realized that it was something more than just a common cold or the flu. After weeks of allergy testing, doctor's appointments, CT scans, the cause of my symptoms kind of finally came to light, and I had a golf ball sized tumor in my nasal cavity. And how that went unnoticed for as long as it did still baffles me to this day. You can't see a golf ball sized tumor in your nasal cavity, but nevertheless, the surgeon at the University of Iowa Hospital removed it, and they removed it successfully. And I was ecstatic, and I was finally out of the hospital, and I could breathe, and I could be a kid again. However, my jubilance was short-lived. Shortly thereafter, right before my family was going to leave for Bible camp, actually, my parents told me that that we would have to go back to the hospital because they found something in my tumor. And I'd cried a lot because I didn't want to return. I wanted my time in the hospital to be over. And so then at Bible camp, on one of the last days, and I remember this vividly, for my friends and family that were there, we had a prayer circle with me in the center, and they were just kind of praying for my well-being and my future. And that was the first time that I had seen my father cry. And, you know, as a 10-year-old, you don't understand what terms like malignant and chemotherapy and cancer mean. But from looking at my parents, I knew it wasn't good. And it's remarkable how kids can pick up on that. They can always know when there's something wrong. They might not know why or what, but they know it. And I could tell my parents were scared. Thus, so was I. And so I started chemotherapy, and I instantly knew like this journey wasn't going to be easy. I reacted very poorly to my first treatment, and I remember going to sleep right before they started to administer the chemotherapy and waking up multiple days later, like scared out of my mind. And for me, the notion of death didn't seem possible. You know, you're 10. In your mind, you still wonder, what are you going to grow up to become? Like an astronaut or a football player? But never do you entertain the notion that you might not grow up at all. And I could go on for hours about individual memories or experiences I had through my chemotherapy journey. But what's more important, and what's more important to me, is what happened after. And so I walked out of the hospital roughly a year later, cancer-free and completely changed. Cancer had brought my family closer together and had changed my outlook on life. I had learned to cherish any moment that I had, not knowing if it was going to be my last. And it is this mentality that's kind of defined my life. People this day still ask me a very interesting question. If you could go back and you could choose, would you choose not to have cancer again? And I think their initial assumption is in the question itself. Would you choose not to have cancer again? Because it would seem odd to ask somebody if they would choose to have cancer, right? However, my answer is always, I would do it again in a heartbeat, even if I knew the eventual outcome was in doubt. People are generally shocked by that answer, especially because it doesn't matter if I knew if I would survive or not. Because cancer taught me to cherish those things out of you, or cherish those around you. It taught me to live in the moment, and it taught me that worrying about things out of your control is fruitless. And it taught me that someone always loves you. Now I'm a 22-year-old college student, so of course I routinely forget some of these lessons from time to time. But I'm always reminded, and this is a way of thinking that I've tried to help dominate how I live my life. So when I was coped up in the hospital for days on end, I was able to escape by watching movies. And my favorite were like the adventure movies. So I would imagine Indiana Jones and his imaginary sidekick Jake Dehi running around and exploring the world, reclaiming lost treasures from bad guys because it belongs in a museum. But now that I was out, I told myself to chase this dream. Fortunately, I'm not a well-known archaeologist that fights bad guys, but I have gotten to travel. As a kid, I learned harshly that you never know what day is going to be your last. So I wanted to experience as much of life had to offer before my last came around. So before Nepal, I had the blessing to live in both Morocco and Jordan in the summer of 2014 and the summer of 2015, respectively. And I have been studying Arabic for 3 years, and so I was in both places to continue my studies. Now, I was born and raised a Christian in West Des Moines, Iowa. I attended church regularly, and it was and still is a part of my identity. And that being said, I think the single most rewarding experience of my life, or one of them, was being able to live in two different Islamic societies. Dr. Deming and I actually had this conversation while on the way to Nepal, and it's kind of an odd thing for me to say. My life and my perspective on the world were made clearer by living in a society that I'm expected to fundamentally disagree with. But I have great respect for Islam. I have great respect for the dedication that Muslims have for their faith and how much it matters in their life. I could find commonalities between their faith and mine, and at times I even felt embarrassed by my lack of dedication in comparison. So now, a common question that I was asked by many when I was in the Middle East was what religion I was. And it seems like an overly personal question here in the States, but it's just synonymous with asking your name. And when I would respond with Christian, it was never met with hostility or anger, but with welcome. Akhi, they would call me, my brother in Arabic. Now, obviously, Islam and Christianity have a shared historical or shared history, but the word doesn't make sense in historical context. They meant we were family, regardless of religion and ethnicity, members of the human race, and that I was welcome because of that. And so when we think about the human race, divided by politics, racism, language, intolerance, yet still collective in many ways. And I realized that while in Jordan. And I don't think it was any accident that I lived in an apartment a few blocks from a cancer hospital while I was there. I would sit in my apartment trying desperately to understand the rudiments of Arabic grammar, and my mind would drift to the hospital that I passed every day. Cancer. There it was again, always a reminder in my life. But isn't it in everyone's? We all know someone who has his or her life touched by cancer, whether you yourself had it or you lost a loved one to it. Cancer is one of the biggest enemies to the collective human race that transcends the divisions of religion, language, and politics. So right before I left for Jordan, about a year ago, I had applied to go to the Tibet trip with Above and Beyond Cancer. And I learned about Above and Beyond Cancer through a close friend whose father had become involved in the organization after he lost his wife and my friend's mother to cancer. And so on a whim, I applied to join Dr. Deming and the others and circling Mount Lash, and that constitutes living my life to the fullest, right? I had thought myself at the time. And so I got the phone call from Brad Anderson, actually, who's with Above and Beyond Cancer, merely days after I returned home from Jordan. And he told me that the trip had changed, that instead it was going to be a mission trip to Bhaktapur Cancer Hospital and Kanti Children's Hospital in Kathmandu, Nepal, and they would like me to come along. And so instantly I agreed, ecstatic about another opportunity to travel. And once I had calmed down, I started to worry. How was I going to tell my parents that I was going to Nepal literally days after coming home from Jordan? But they were supportive, and they knew it would be an amazing opportunity. And Nepal was different than Jordan and Morocco for me. In both Jordan and Morocco, I was there to learn and experience life, goals that I had set ever since leaving that hospital room 10 years ago. But in Nepal, I was staring into the eyes of people who were in the same shoes that I was when I was a kid. The Nepali journey almost felt full circle for me. I was able to use my diagnosis for something other than just motivating myself through life. I was able to use my own cancer journey to positively impact the lives of others. And while I couldn't speak Nepalese, I could feel their pain. I was a kid again, watching my parents worry. But this time, I was connecting to the patients in Nepal on a level that transcended language or religion, a level that exists in the collective humanity that cancer affects. And in Nepal, cancer to many is a death sentence, kind of what Dr. Deming was talking about. And the notion of someone surviving cancer is incredibly rare. And at the children's hospital, the situation seemed even more dire. And I saw the same look on their parents' faces in Nepal that I saw on mine when I was diagnosed. However, when I was introduced to them, their eyes would sparkle. Standing before them was a childhood cancer survivor, healthy and alive. For them, I represented hope. A hope that their children could still fantasize about they would grow up to become, and that one day it could be a reality. From Nepal, to Jordan, to Morocco, to Iowa, and beyond, cancer affects us all. And if you look at cancer as a whole, it is impossible to beat. There's too much, it causes too much death and too much suffering. That even thinking about people in your own community it has affected becomes overwhelming. Yet cancer can teach us a lot about the collective human race, as well as about ourselves. And while we wait for a cure, these lessons are important to understand. First, every time you let cancer ruin your day, it is already won. In Nepal, Dr. Deming gave me the chance to speak on the final night to members of our group, local doctors, friends we had made, and representatives from the Nepali Cancer Society. In that speech, I said that every time someone who is undergoing cancer treatment smiles and experiences true joy, then cancer has already been beaten. For while we as individual patients are helpless in the face of it all, as soon as we lose our joy and hope, we are truly lost. This is relevant in all aspects of life. No matter the hardships that you are undergoing, stay hopeful and enjoy the moment you are in. The second lesson that is important to remember is that death doesn't mean the end. We were blessed to visit a local temple in Nepal during one of the first few nights we were there. At the temple, there was a ceremony going on where live music was being played and priests were doing rituals with fire. And a river ran through the middle of the temple. And while the celebration was going on one side, there was a cremation ceremony that was being conducted on the other. And this image has been ingrained in my mind ever since seeing it. A celebration of life was occurring simultaneously with a celebration of death. And as ashes fell from the cremation pyre into the river running through the temple, this lesson kind of dawned on me. While cancer may take our life or the life of a loved one, the memories of that person still live on. The memories inspire doctors to work harder for a cure, inspires family members to achieve more in remembrance, and inspires us all to live life for the fullest while we're still alive. And so that brings me to the last lesson I've learned, a lesson that I've been hammering you over the head with, and so has Dr. Deming through both of our speeches, that life is finite. Moments are fleeting, and the future is uncertain. So do all you can to make each moment count. Seize every opportunity as they present themselves, and strive for greatness. For when it is time for you to leave this earth, whenever that may be, make sure it matters that you were here in the first place. Of course I would have cancer again, because this lesson is invaluable. And in conclusion, I'll leave you with a quote from a film, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, that I feel embodies this way of thinking. To see the world, things dangerous to come to see behind walls, draw closer, to find each other, and to feel. That is the purpose of life. Don't let cancer or any other hardships get in the way of your purpose. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jake. That was really wonderful. Thanks for sharing your story. I think what we're going to do now is, if you guys have any questions for Jake about his experience or for Dr. Deming about the foundation, feel free to stick around and check out the photographs from Dylan Huey and the most recent trip. And Jake and Dr. Deming will be here mingling, and we can all talk if you'd like to continue the conversation. Thank you all so much for coming out to hear our talk tonight.